Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the podcast. This week, I'm introducing you to Peter Gunn, who's doing something really groovy in the world. You know those old tales? Beowulf, the Epic of Gilgamesh, the Iliad, the Odyssey. Of course you do. At some point or other, in all of our lives, we were sort of encouraged or forced to read these old epics. Well, Peter is rewriting these stories with a little twist. All the protagonists in those old tales are men, and what Peter is doing is nothing short of groundbreaking. Because he did not see any women in these old tales, he didn't find any strong women, he didn't see any women that he could show to his daughters and say, hey, look at these groundbreaking, trailblazing women, he decided to write his own epics where the feminine is powerful, where the feminine represents. But he also goes a step further and demonstrates just how incredibly amazing the synergy is when both the feminine and the masculine work together. So Peter is a fabulously cool guy, and the work he's doing, frankly, is needed. And his miracle is incredible. It happened when he was a young child, and of course, it changed his life. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Peter Gunn.
For a couple instances where, because I was having the, I forget what the second name for, but I was seeing things before they happened. Okay. So back then, you know, you would call before you showed up at somebody's house, you know, and we had a friend that lived several hours away. And I remember vividly seeing her show up at the front door. And I told this to my mother, and she's like, no, she's not coming. She hasn't called. A couple hours later, she shows up. Okay. And my mother just looked odd at me. Well, overall, I'd say in the creative spirit, okay, because everything I do correlates to that. So I'm a bodybuilder, okay, and I look at it as the body being a piece of clay, you know, molded and shaped, you know, and it fills me creatively. Author, poet, there again, creative writer. So, and I'm also doing music writing and composing as well. So it's evolved with me, you know, it's become more than one thing.
Okay. Well, I am intrigued by this bodybuilding portion. Now, was this something that kind of called to you ever since you were a kid, or how did that happen?
Well, when I was 12 years old, I was considered morbidly obese. Now, I'm only 5'3", you know, but at that height, I was about 230 pounds. So I was quite big. And the doctor, I remember the doctor vividly telling me, if I don't do something, I'm not going to live past 30. So, you know, I knew I had to make a life change at that age. And I got into bodybuilding, and I found that I loved it. It fulfilled me creatively.
Oh my gosh, that's an incredible story. I have to say, you know, I do love swimming. I love going out on hikes. Sometimes I whine more than others. You know, when you were this young and you had to make this change, were you just like gung-ho, or did it take a while to get into the flow?
I found that I had to do my homework, because the food pyramid, as it's preached to us, is actually should be upside down. Okay. At least according to me and the way I like to eat. Okay. I'm digging the carnivore diet. So I'm a firm believer in it, but I had to, you know, go to the library and pick up the books that have the dust on them, blow it off and start reading, you know, and, you know, try to base your opinion in science, basically, you know, not just what someone says hearsay.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, every body is different. I mean, I have a friend who is vegan, and
and she's very staunch about it. She's absolutely vegan and she advocates for animals. I tried to do that and my health took a nosedive. Mm-hmm. And I realized that for my body, I need different nutrients than she does. So I, you know, instead of self-recrimination and getting upset at myself that I couldn't toe the line on the vegan diet, I tried to be gentle with myself and just say, hey, everyone's different. It's okay. You know, vegetables, I love vegetables. Thank God. I do have to admit that when I was younger and my mom tried to, you know, introduce peas or broccoli to the kitchen table, more often than not, I was, you know, feeding them to the dog who apparently loved them. Thank God. But, I do remember the poor dog, Josh, he definitely got a lot of fiber from my side of the table. So, well, and then I'd like to talk about this. I love that you're a creative person. Mm-hmm. I love that it shows up in all these different parts of your life. This writing piece, this author piece, was that something that started early?
Well, I've always loved poetry, and I've always loved the old epics like the Odyssey, you know, Beowulf, Dante's Inferno. You know, and when I had my daughter in 2010, I wanted to enroll her into my love of poetry and the classics. So I wanted to expose her to them. But then I started asking myself, you know, where's the feminine represented here? I don't see it. I see love poetry. I see poems that women have written, and they're great, but nothing in that encompasses the hero journey for the feminine. It's like it doesn't exist. So it's in a way saying that our mothers, our daughters, our sisters aren't good enough. It's not for them, you know? And I can understand back then, back in the day, you know, hundreds of years ago, you know, women were treated differently, but now I think it's time that we enroll the feminine into the hero journey.
I love that. Thank you. I wholeheartedly agree. You've got two thumbs up from me over here. It's past time. I mean, sometimes I think about the ancient goddesses because when I was in seminary, we did a really interesting deep dive on what it looked like when the old religions, Inanna, Baal, those old gods mm-hmm. and goddesses kind of, you know, Christianity came in and for a long period, there was kind of a folding together of the old and the new. So a lot of those old stories got folded into Christianity and then Christianity, you know, kind of steamrolled over and those old quote unquote pagan gods kind of got left in the dust. But some of the sculptures and the statuary that they've discovered of Inanna and those goddesses is really spectacular. But again, as you say, we don't really have these huge, massive epics, these poems that are kind of, you know, the story of a woman going on a massive journey or a woman going into the underworld. I think about Gilgamesh, which is one of the mm-hmm. oldest sagas that we've unearthed. You know, so all that being said, I do have to say that there is a fond place in my heart for Dante's Inferno. Mm-hmm. I have to tell you that in high school, we read it and then we had a big test on it in English class. And the teacher who I loved said, all right, everyone can create a cheat sheet. It can be this big of a piece of paper and all the notes that you take have to be in the shape of Dante's Inferno. So I was writing as small as possible for all the details of the Inferno so that I could actually pass the test. But there is something so beautiful. Well, I mean, I also know the background of Dante's Inferno too, which is that he wrote it partially as a revenge poem against the people who made him mad back then, I mean, basically weren't nice to him, bullied him, chased him out of town. So it's actually quite delightful in that way. I mean, I don't think that when he wrote it, he thought hundreds of years later, people were still going to be reading it. And
Yeah.
Isn't that fascinating? So I'd love mm-hmm. to ask you, which one of those is your favorite? Iliad, Odyssey, Dante's Inferno. Do you have a favorite?
Well, I would say that the Odyssey would be my favorite because at least there's some feminine representation there, you know, like Helen of Troy, things like that. But it's mentioned. It's not that much. They deserve a little bit more. Yeah.
Absolutely. So, and then your work, was it a little scary or a little nerve-wracking to kind of put yourself out there or maybe even consider writing these things? Like when you first started having the ideas, did it take a while to kind of put pen to paper?
Well, writing in LLP, which is my own unique poetic language, okay, it takes time. It's very time-consuming. So you could sit down for an hour and only get a paragraph, okay? So you have to allow for that. Now, there is a second book. There's going to be a trilogy. There is a second book that's almost done right now, and there's going to be another one and possibly even more after that. But it takes time. But I think people understand that, and they admire craftsmanship because they see how it's linked together, the words, and they realize on their own acknowledgement that it takes time. Right now, with my director, Andrea, we're hired about 30 voice actors because we're doing the audiobook for the Amazons. And one of them was just, he was amazed at how I wrote this because he's like, I couldn't do this, you know? And I considered it a compliment. And then, but then Andrea is like, he generally wanted to know what my secret sauce was. And I joked, it's probably insanity.
Well, it is, you know, a lot of people start things, right? Any kind of creative project, very few. And this is really true. I think I heard a statistic, you know, out of 100 people, if 100 people start a project, 95 will not finish.
Yeah, you're right.
People will see it through, whether it takes months or years, they'll actually come back and finish the project. So first of all, you know, being close to finishing your second book, congratulations. That is a feat.
Thank you.
You know, it's a work of commitment, but you can also tell your passion, right? Your passion is there. Yeah. So you're going to finish it. I want to ask if there are any modern day women who inspire you or modern day stories that inspire you.
The character in the book of Jen, which is an arbitress or today be considered a judge, was inspired by Judge Jeanine Pirro. So, yeah, there are women, I would say it's more of a collaboration of women I've worked with in the past. So it's not just one, but it's one, like a collaboration of the attributes of a lot of them put together. Yeah.
Okay. And I'd love to ask, when you have a little writer's block or you feel a little stuck, what helps you to kind of move past it or get inspiration?
I like to go back and read the classics. You know, I mean, right now I'm writing, reading T.S. Eliot on poetry and poets, you know, and it helps me get back into the mood to see what they did and how they also dealt with it. Because, you know, it's not a new thing. Writer's block happens to everybody. Yeah.
It's a true story. Well, I'd love to ask you my second question of the podcast, even though I've asked you like 30 already, but within the framework of my podcast, the second question always is, did you grow up in a religious household? And if you did, how has that evolved over time? And has it influenced your work at all that you do, your writing?
Well, I will say one thing is I had an NDE at a very early age, okay, which is a near-death experience. Now, granted, this was back in the early 80s when it was normal to leave children unsupervised, so my parents were good parents, okay? It was during a heat wave, okay, and it was very hot outside, and of course, being, you know, around 6 or 7, you don't realize the symptoms of heat stroke coming up. I felt very tired, and then I went to sleep in direct sunlight, and that's when my body started going into shock. Okay. Then that's when the NDE started. I remember seeing my light body, people always describe it. I always say it looked like a reverse black and white painting of yourself. So you're all white and everything around me was black. I was moving up the tunnel, you know, with the light at the end, and I saw it, and I came out and was greeted by what I believe to be an angel. Okay. And I was shown having like a past life regression, like my past life flashed before my eyes. It was sort of like on a TV, okay? But being so young, it went relatively fast, but also the same sense, time didn't seem to exist. It seemed to happen instantaneously, okay? After that, I was brought to a gate, okay? But there was another angel there. The one that showed me the past life regression was welcoming me. But then there's another one there. I could tell he was upset. And he said, my job isn't done. I have to go back. And then I woke up back in my body, paramedic over me. And I'm like, you know, that was the life change experience for me, is to what set me off on this path. Yeah.
Okay. Oh my goodness. So were you able to tell your parents what happened eventually?
I was scared of it. And I can tell that my mother is scared her too. There were a couple instances where, because I was having I forget what the second name for it, but I was seeing things before they happened. Okay. So back then, you know, you would call before you showed up to somebody's house, you know, and we had a friend that lived several hours away. And I remember vividly seeing her show up at the front door. And I told this to my mother, and she's like, no, she's not coming. She hasn't called. A couple hours later, she showed up. Okay. And my mother just looked odd at me. And then, well, we lived in Wisconsin. So it, you know, got cold during the winter. And I saw my mother break her ankle on the ice prior to it happening. I told her about it. She's, you know, shook it off. And then when it happened, she's like, and I can tell then my mother was getting scared. Okay. Yeah. So I sort of shut up about it. Yeah.
Well, and you know, I'm sure you know, because you've probably done extensive research on NDAs, but I just learned this in the last week, because strangely enough, I've had multiple guests lately within the last couple of months come on and tell their stories about their NDEs. It's very interesting. At any rate, they have said that, or I read this week, that people who have or experience an NDE, most of them, when they return, they have some sort of psi or psychic ability.
Yes. And I'm very much an empath now because of it.
Yeah. And you know, scientists or those who are kind of trying to investigate this, because in the Western modality, a lot of scientists are like, this isn't real. This isn't, you know, what are they talking about? Something's wrong. But in this book, they were saying some scientists theorize that, you know, we go around our lives, we're all conscious, whatever consciousness means. And because of our societies, our cultures, our world, we have to narrow down our way of perceiving the world into these tiny little gates of perception so we can navigate the world successfully and we don't go crazy. But when you have an NDE, those gates are blown wide open and you're exposed to kind of like everything. And excuse me. And when you return, you know, the gates aren't open all the way, but they've been open considerably larger. Yeah. And so you can have these psi experiences where you, for example, you saw things that happened. But, you know, quite honestly, there are also people who are walking around that just have that capacity who haven't had an NDE. They're always really fascinating to talk to, I'm sure. Just like it's fascinating.
Well, there's a lot of people that believe that we all have that ability. It's just been hidden. Yes.
Absolutely. Have you found it challenging to live in a world that kind of, in general, doesn't accept those capacities, you know, for telepathy or clairvoyance, knowing that you kind of have these abilities? Is it challenging?
Well, you have to make a decision. You want to accept yourself for who you are. Okay. Then you're going to have to steer away from those people that aren't accepting of you, plain and simple, and go towards a different path.
Yeah. And I'm also, you know, this experience when you were 6 or 7, you know, I always tell people that growing up overseas, especially in an Islamic country, changed my entire life. It was the path that led me off into doing a lot of the work that I do now. I would imagine that this experience when you were 6 or 7 changed everything for you.
Yes, it did. It made me realize that there's more to than, you know, this life and that we live, continue to live after. And it's quite normal for you to have lived several hundred lives. It's normal. Some of us have. Yeah.
And so, you know, when your mother kind of reacted with a little bit of alarm or concern, did you feel like you had to shut it down a little bit?
Yeah. Yeah. I could tell I was scaring her. She's a deeply religious person. You know, I was raised strict Roman Catholic, but then there were, you know, lines in the sand you never went past. Okay. And you know, it's, I would say religion is like a box. You stay in this box and you don't go out of the box. Then you're fine. You're happy. The priest is happy with you. You're a good, you know, practitioner of that religion. But once you go out the box, which I was doing, yeah, that wouldn't be accepted. So I had to stay within the box and just shut up.
And would you say that you've had to, did you have to shut it down? And I mean, do you accept it as part of yourself now?
I didn't shut it down. I just stopped saying anything about it because there was more. I would see white lights, which some of them, when they came close, would then turn into dead human beings. Okay. And then there was the black mist I would see, but they never got close. It was always like 50 yards away, you know, but they were always there, and, you know, lurking.
Yeah, you're so brave. I love that you're like, oh my God. I mean, first of all, so I am a child of the 80s and I really resonate with your description of parents just being like, go play, go. I don't care what you do. I trust you. And yeah. You'd be gone maybe the whole day and nobody would care. And if you got hurt, you were on your own for the most part. You had to stumble home or nurse yourself or whatever. And it wasn't because they didn't love you or care about you, but it was just a different time, you know?
It's how they were it's taught to raise children.
Absolutely. And sometimes I look at the way parenting is done today and I just thank God that I grew up then because I had so much freedom. It was unreal to have a summer day where there were no plans and you could just go out and have an adventure throughout the entire neighborhood with your friends. So I do like look back at those times with just great reverence and appreciation and gratitude. But not good when you're, you know, that little and you're left in the sun when it's really, really hot. And I got heat stroke once at an air show in Albuquerque, where Albuquerque itself was 100 degrees. And we were on, of course, a massive field of tarmac because of all the planes.
That makes it worse. Yes.
Oh my God. I think it was like 115, 120. Mm-hmm. I started. Yeah. It comes on you so slowly and you don't really understand it's happening until it's too late and you're already kind of really in trouble. So, I've never, oh my God, that was really intense. So, but as a child, I mean, you kind of don't even have any understanding of what's happening. Well, I wanted to ask you about your experience of the angels, because I am intrigued by that. Obviously, in Catholicism, right? They absolutely have angels. They have saints. And you said your mother was very devout. What was your experience of them? Did they look like energy fields? Did they look like human people? What did they appear as?
There was a bright orb in the middle of them, okay? And they were somewhat transparent from what I could see, so you can see through them, but made off of light, okay? The one that said I had to go back, I got the odd feeling like I knew him, okay? Like, yes, like we were buddies or friends or something, but you ever get that feeling like, I know this person, and that's the vibe I got from him. And I can't explain it. Yeah.
Oh my God, Peter, that is so beautiful. I mean, what a thing to experience and then try to unpack at age 6 or 7. What I think is especially powerful is, you know, the second figure who seemed familiar said, you know, it's not his time. And there's still work to be done. Did you ever think to yourself, you know, as the years progressed, you know, year 8, year 9, year 10, Oh my gosh, what is the work that I'm supposed to be doing?
Yeah, well, I wake up every day with that in mind. So I can't waste a day. I have to be productive for the day because I have a job to do.
I mean, I kind of am just in love with the idea that you have this angelic mandate. That's like, and this is also why you are someone who completes the projects you start. You know that the angels are on your side and they're like, hey, you've got work to do. You know, most of us don't have that kind of ratification or knowledge. So kudos to you. I want to ask, was that knowledge ever heavy for you? Like a burden, like, oh dear, I have work to do. I need to figure it out. What does it look like?
Well, when you're a kid, you know, you're trying to see where you fit in, you know, and you always have your groups in school and stuff like that. But I've had people tell me when I was 16 that I feel like I was 40. I know I'm an old soul, okay? And I saw it for what it is pretty quickly as a child. Like, okay, I'm not any of these groups. You go do your thing and I'll go do my thing, you know? And I was accepting of that. I didn't feel the need to fit in. I dabbled, you know, I would, you know, see what the group's about, but I never got involved.
Okay, I love that because it so resonates with me because sometimes I literally don't understand people and I don't understand the choices they're making. And I get really confused by sometimes social interactions. And so I choose not to say anything and I stay silent because I also figure that observing is really helpful rather than trying to talk. Observation has really helped me to figure out people and how to interact with them, which sounds so strange. But I'm glad that, you know, as we all are in our teen years trying to figure out who we are, right? We're like, who are we? And in the 80s, that was a little more even crazy because the clothing was really vibrant and neon and stretchy and leg warmers and all sorts of stuff. Flash dance and Lycra and leotards. It was an interesting time, let's put it that way. But also I kind of love the fashion now. I don't know. I hope it's going to go back to that at some point.
Nostalgia always sells.
Yeah. The what?
The nostalgia always sells. It always
does.
Will.
I mean, I've told this story a few times. There was a period in junior high where black and yellow was really popular. Like those were the two colors in the Midwest that were like hot. And I remember walking around junior high thinking everybody looks like a bee. And I was like, I don't understand what's happening here. You know, I didn't have a mom who would just take me out shopping to buy me whatever colors were popular. But it was actually a really fascinating time. There are parts of the 80s that I absolutely appreciate and love and other parts where I'm like, oh dear, that can be left in the past. Good night. Well, I do have to say that, do you think that any of your life, you know, I would assume, did you go to church with your mother?
Yes, I was an altar boy. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. So do you think that your experience of Catholicism, I mean, did you appreciate it while you're going through it or did it seem like a burden?
I saw it for what it is pretty fast because the priest was handing us the altar wine to drink before service, so we'd go out there with a buzz. So I saw it for what it was pretty fast. Yeah.
What?
Yeah, the priest was handing us the altar wine. We were all three of us, the priest and the two altar boys, were going out doing mass with a buzz. We were drunk. Yeah.
What? Okay.
Yes. Never. I am dead serious. Yes.
So, but even at that age, you were like, something's a little wrong here.
Oh yeah, yeah. He was morally inept. He was. I could see the priest was a bad man. He was a wolf in sheep's clothing. Yeah, I saw that right away. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Well, I mean, also probably because, quite honestly, you're an empath, and you know, with these heightened perceptions after your near-death experience, that's kind of a superpower to be able to sense where danger lies or where there are negative energies. I mean, have you ever used that superpower in the rest of your life?
It keeps me from getting into situations that would harm me. It really does. Yeah. I remember when I was stationed in Italy, I went on a tour and they had taken us to one of the old castles. And as soon as they pulled up, the negative energy that was emanating from this place was overwhelming for me. Like all these visions of torture appeared in my head. And a lot of bad things that happened in that place, I just told them I can't go in. I refused to. I just couldn't bring myself to do it. Yeah.
Wow. Was it? It was an ancient castle, I presume.
It was pretty old. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. See, so for me, if I had that experience, I would think that the gifts are a blessing and a curse. You know, I mean, I don't know if you're a fan of castles. Maybe you're like, I don't need to see this castle. One castle.
Oh, no, I love castles. That's why I went on this tour and I saw as many as I could. But there were ones that had negative spirits still living in them. Okay, so I had to be careful of that.
Wow. Okay, so let me ask you, with this sensing, with this capacity that you have, do you ever think to yourself, you know, are you supposed to be going into these places and helping these spirits transition over to the light? Like, have you ever thought about that as also part of your life's work?
I look at helping as more of a hands-off experience. Okay. I compare it to like the lighthouse. Okay. And the boats that are out in troubled waters, need to make the conscious decision to turn towards the lighthouse. Okay. I'm not going to them. They would have to come to me. Okay. Then that's when I may help. Okay. Because if you take out another person, you're carrying their load as well. It gets dumped on you, whether physically or emotionally. A lot of people can't handle that. You shouldn't have to handle that. That's their load. They need to tow that weight, not you. So they have to make the conscious effort to come in short and elevate, change your lives. Yeah.
Well, that is 100% right. I actually saw a healer here in Santa Fe who had a 3-month waiting list, and he'd created this modality that was completely inexplicable, but healed people. And I don't even know how. He's no longer here. He's passed away, but I talked to one of his friends because I don't know how many clients he would see a day, but each session was about an hour and a half, 2 hours. And they said, oh yeah, after every day, he would have to go home and take 2 to 3 hours to clean himself, if that's the verbiage you want to use, like get rid of what he'd taken on from the people that he was working with. And I don't think a lot of people understand that healing or being of service to others, it comes with a price. And the price is that you have to take the time to take care of yourself, and that those things, those energies accumulate and kind of can get stuck on you. Every story I've ever read about any sort of shaman or medicine healer, part of the deal is that you later on, you have to take care of yourself and, you know, smudge yourself or do other things. Thank you for bringing that up. I think people need to know that. Because even I think when you're going through your day-to-day life, you can have an interaction with someone in the grocery store who's grumpy, or maybe you're on a hike and you have a scary experience with a bear. Let's hope that never happens to anyone who listens to this. And those kind of energetic exchanges can get stuck on you. And you have to take care of yourself so that you can live another day to fight the good fight, whatever that looks like for you. With the Catholicism, did having this experience with the angels and on the other side, did it give you a greater appreciation for just, you know, the idea of Catholicism or the idea of religion in general?
I would tend to take a, shall we say, happier approach to it, because people get so serious about it. And if you can have the courage to laugh in the face of Satan, he can't touch you. Yeah. He can't touch you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's what I feel is my purpose is. And even if it's just one, if I can take one soul from his grasp, I did my job. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, you were talking about the black mist earlier, and I was so intrigued by that and interested as to what that could have possibly be, that energy, but that never really approached, but you could see it. And, you know, sometimes it can be a huge burden to see things like that. I was reading a book last night, and they were talking about a gentleman who had a near-death experience. And when he came back and lived his life, you know, every once in a while, how it sort of showed up for him was he would see, I mean, you could say the number 8 or the infinity sign sideways buried into the backs of people, whether it was at the grocery store or somewhere else. And
as above, you know, so below.
Yes, yes. And so, and it was very rare that he saw the figure 8 or the infinity sign, but it was in their back. He lived in such a small village that he soon found out when he saw that meant they were going to be dying soon. And so for him, it became a huge burden just to have that knowledge. And where do I step in? Do I say something? Do I just let it go on? Is it already a done deal? Have you ever felt like it's a burden to have these visions or to see these black mists or to, you know, just be an empath? Because that can be really challenging too.
You learn to change your life and accommodate it. Okay. You have to, otherwise it's you can't be normal. Really accept the fact that you're not normal and change your life accordingly. So accept it, plain and simple. Yeah.
That's so beautiful. When you look back at your life and how it's evolved, do you see the NDE as a necessary part of your story so that you can live the life that you've had now and bring what you're bringing into the world now?
I think I would have done it without the NDE. Honestly, I still would have done it. Yeah.
Okay. That's actually really fascinating because, you know, some people look at their NDE and it's like everything has emerged from it, from that knowledge. But what a precious gift that was given to you because you are very rare. You are very, very rare to have this vision of the other side, to have knowledge even of the other side is completely astonishing. Do you ever use any of your, I don't know, thoughts, ideas, contemplations of the other side in the work that you write?
Well, I'm starting a graphic novel series called Sigma Squad that is based in theology, actually Gnosticism, the Gnostic Gospels, the Pistosophia. And it's going to be my way of helping people see what's going on behind the scenes. Because let's face it, there's a lot of people out there that will pick up the Bible, not because they don't know how to read, it's because it has no pictures. But if I put it in graphic novel form, okay, they'd be more apt to read it. And of course, then I incorporate, you know, superheroes, things like that. You know, kids would be more apt to look at it too. Yeah.
Okay, fabulous. I have to tell you that when I was really little and we visited my grandparents in Minneapolis, she gave me an illustrated children's Bible. And, mm-hmm. you know, when I was a kid, I was like, pictures, I love it. I was happy.
Yeah. And some adults have that mentality too. So they still have that childhood mentality. So they don't want a book without pictures in it. Yeah.
I'm telling you, I absolutely love graphic novels and comics. I have one of the sad laments of my life is that pretty much my entire library is in storage because what I do now is I move from house sit to house sit. So my entire graphic novel comic library is in storage. And every once in a while, I think about a comic and I sigh inwardly and say to myself, someday I'm going to be able to look at that again. But I love comics. I love gorgeous images, beautiful images, you know, images that challenge me. I'm just, some people are just hardwired for that. And I'm one of those people.
Yeah, they are. They are. You're right.
Do you feel like you are as well? Is that why you're doing this?
Well, the concept of the superhero has always been attractive to me. Okay. And it's one of the reasons also why I started bodybuilding, because you look like a superhero. You look like the comic, you know? Yeah. So, yes, I do feel that I've always been attracted to that. Yeah.
Wonderful. I love it. Another like comic book superhero fan. Yay. Mm-hmm. It's like, I know there's lots of us, but I rarely get to actually bump into those people. So I just, thank you. I'm glad for this work you're doing. I find it very intriguing, this new project that you're embarking on, because I don't think anybody's done anything like it in the way that you're thinking about it so far.
It will, let's just say the mainstream media is not going to like it. It will have them pissed off, because it will expose a lot of things that they don't want to expose. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think all of us, and I've been talking about this lately, are living in these boxes. I mean, you could take science, right? I love science. I'm a huge fan. I've loved it since I was a kid. But at some point, when we reach a certain threshold, it no longer works with what's being observed or what's happening in the world. And so one of the things is that we have all these boxes that, you know, either our culture or society or even ourselves, we put ourselves in. Like, you could say Catholicism, that's a box. You could say, you know, I don't know, joining a writing club that only does fiction and only what is another box. I mean, there are all these things, starting from a very young age, by the way, that we kind of put ourselves into these boxes that we can't break out of.
And well, that's what our parents did. So we need to learn to break out of the box of our upbringing. Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, mainstream media, 100%, they sell issues, they sell stories based on keeping a lot of us in line or giving us the ideas that we already believe in or feeding us what we already want. So I think it really curbs critical thinking, or even like going out in the world and experiencing something yourself. I think that's super helpful. You know, if you're someone who doesn't like, I mean, you have to know, since I grew up in an Islamic country, I have a very different experience of Muslims and Hindus. Mm-hmm. And all of those religions over there, Sikh. If you go into communities where there are those people, you might make friends and understand that not everybody's.
I spent 7 years in Iraq teaching, so I know 100% what you're talking about. Yes.
Oh, you did. Now, what kind of teaching did you do over there?
Well, in the Air Force, I spent 20 years in the Air Force. I fixed the fighter jets, the electronics, the electrical systems. And I taught them how to do that in their jets, in their systems. Yeah. So I made a few friends.
Oh, okay. First of all, I have to just say, okay, were you fixing the jets outside or was it inside? Oh my God. Okay. So you can, I mean, I know you had this extreme heat stroke event when you were young, but obviously can you handle heat? I'm sorry. I could not.
I have to learn to adapt to that environment. You do. Yeah.
Good God. Okay, so you've had an experience of a culture other than your own. And I think those are so important because they help us understand that the world's a much bigger place.
And we're all the same. All we want is happiness, peace, be left alone. Yeah.
And also, I find the idea intriguing that you spent so much time over there. And then you have these, you know, these ancient stories of Beowulf, the Iliad, the Odyssey. Mm-hmm. I know they're from different parts of the globe, but Iraq has one of the oldest stories, Gilgamesh, and the adventure that he goes on. So was living over there helpful for your creative processes at all now?
Well, I had more peace, you know, living over there, you know, so I had a lot more time to write and contemplate and think. Yeah.
Wow. Okay, very cool. How exciting and fun. Well, I do have to tell you that the main question of the podcast is I would love for you to share a story about magic, something magical or miraculous that's happened in your life. And you've kind of already talked about your NDE. You're so proactive. Mm-hmm. So are there any other stories that you'd like to share?
I would say, I think the day I joined the military, and I think it's a lesson a lot of people need to learn, is to follow your heart. Okay. I had initially joined the Air National Guard, so I didn't go into active duty. And of course I had to wait for a boot camp assignment. But once I got there, it was like a light went off in my head. Something clicked. Okay. And I knew that I could make a career of this, you know, and it's a true testament to following your heart. Okay. And I'm a firm believer in that. I speak about it a lot, you know, follow your heart. If you ever have an experience where you're doing something that you feel passionate about, you lost track of time, you know, you look up and 4 hours went by on the clock, you didn't realize that that's a sign, okay, that's what you're supposed to be doing. So then bring your brain involved and get involved in the process and figure out how to make money doing that. Yeah.
I am grateful that you brought your heart in because, you know, there are certainly lots of people talking about intuition and how to navigate the world and listen to what your heart is telling you. But it's another whole other kettle of fish to actually live into it. And
it takes courage. It takes courage.
It does. And also sometimes if you're just starting out, it can take a while before that connection with your heart and your intuition actually locks. It's almost like you have to take your heart out to tea and scones. Start a relationship. You can't just barge in and say, hey, I need you to work for me right now. And you have to start telling me what I should be doing or what path I should be following. You kind of have to, you know, take your heart out on a couple of dates or something like that. Get to know your heart, get to know yourself, get to know where your passion lies or maybe even just who you are.
Well, I always think about, if you ever read the book Power versus Force by Dr. Hawkins?
I haven't.
Okay, it's a good book, but he speaks about the levels of consciousness in that book, and he actually mapped it out. Okay, they gave a number to every level of consciousness. So I think it's you have to be true to yourself and understand where you're at that map of consciousness, at that level. I know it's insulting some people to say, oh, you're not at my level. But it's you have to think about it at that point. Like if someone were up here, like a Jesus Christ, okay, and someone did something wrong to him, he'd turn the other cheek. He would forgive them. He knows the folly of revenge. It's pointless. But then someone down here, okay, would look up at him like, how weak? How come he doesn't get revenge? And they would want immediate revenge. They would fight immediately. So you need to understand where you're at in order to then elevate. So you need to really think about, hey, where am I at this level? Okay. Look at how you're reacting. I mean, are you care about what other people say about you or do you not care about them? Okay. That's a big sign there too. Yeah.
I have to
say. And then learn how to elevate. Learn how to elevate.
Yeah. I have to say that as I get older, I care less and less what people think of me.
That's good. That's good. Yes.
Which is one of the biggest gifts. I'm getting older. You know, everybody always talks about, you know, getting older is terrible. And oh my God, you lose your youth and you become irrelevant and whatever. And I think to myself, oh my God, I'm so much more comfortable with who I am. I literally don't care. I understand this life is finite. So why not wear, I don't know, pink and purple together, red and purple? Like, who cares? And by the way, if you're caring about those kinds of things, you are missing the entire point of being alive. Come on. Come on.
Well, most people like that are lemmings. They just follow the crowd. Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah. It's a good thing I'm terrified of heights. So I wouldn't be a lemming and jump off the cliff with everyone else. All right, dear listeners, that's it. That is it for another episode of the podcast. If you want to check out what Peter is doing in the world, there will be a link to Peter's website in the episode show notes. You know, we're all made of stardust, but we're also made of a myriad of things. You know, Peter's a bodybuilder. He's a fantasy writer. He loves comic books. He was in the military. He's writing poetry. And so when I read that quotation that says we all contain universes, I can think of no better representative of that than Peter. He definitely is changing the world in his way and giving us
new examples of what feminine power and feminine energy looks like. I want to thank Peter for being on the show, but especially I want to thank each and every one of you who listens to this podcast. Please do remember that ratings and reviews are so important and where it's at, and they mean ever so much to me. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Peter. Reinvent the world. Reinvent the word. I mean, Peter is actually doing something brilliant, and he's bringing a new way to look at those old texts, those old songs, those old poems. He's bringing a new way to view them, to incorporate them into our lives. But really, be like Peter and go out into the world and see what you can reinvent. See what little twist you can put on some creation in the world. And I think, you know, different people at different times need these reinventions. They need these new ways of thinking. Because honestly, and I do believe this, the more ways we have to look at this world, the more ways we have to look at these old tales and see ourselves in them, well, they can model for us just how fierce and formidable we ourselves can be in this great, big, gorgeous world of ours.
Okay, yeah, well, I mean, they can find me at www.petergunn.net, and I could also go to Amazon Kindle. I've been Peter Gunn, the Amazon, to buy my book. And I would say to wait and not download the Audible book that exists, because we're currently reworking it, revamping it. We're making the Amazons into a live drama. So we have voice actors hired. I have a soundtrack made. So yeah, we're revamping that. There's other projects. Like I said, Sigma Squad is coming hopefully this summer. There are delays. But, you know, God willing, it will be able to get it out on the market too. But that's not out just yet.